Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome to another segment, another exciting, beautiful, memorable segment of Afternoon Satsang. And I use these adjectives because today's segment is personally my favorite, and I'm sure the favorite for many of our listeners too. Today's segment is Satyam Shivam Sundaram. And I'm Arvind from Team Radio Sai, being joined, as always, by Prem from Team Radio Sai for another beautiful afternoon in our Divine Lord's presence. Sairam Prem.
Sairam Arvind, and welcome to all listeners of Radio Sai to this week's afternoon satsang.
You know, the progress that we have made in covering Swami's life, it has been quite rapid in the first few years because, you know, we take chunks of 2 years or 3 years. Now we have reached 1947, and from 1947 onwards, I'm sure it's going to get tougher and tougher in trying to capture all that happened in a single year. For example, if someone were to say what all happened, if someone were to ask us to relate all that happened related to Swami and Swami's mission and Swami's life, say in 1973, I'm sure we'll have no idea where to begin, where to end. So I'm sure Prem will agree with me that from now on, when we go ahead with Swami's life, it will not be exactly in chronological order, nor will it be as comprehensive as what we have done till 1947, because from 1947 onwards, it took a real launch and Swami began to operate in dimensions more than one with even greater intensity and on an even larger scale. So it becomes relatively very difficult to be comprehensive and intense at the same time.
And I think that's also because not everybody had that idea that this is something historical they're being part of.
Hmm.
Most of these things which we're narrating now, I think, have been chronicled in hindsight.
Correct.
After seeing Swami become so popular and after seeing Swami reveal His true nature to the world at large, people went back and started documenting the beautiful time they spent with Swami. But I think many of them would have just, it would have been one of the events which happened in their life. And that also is a cause for mix-up in the history and the order of events.
In fact, the early life that we are dealing with, just to let our listeners know, is mostly drawn from Satyam Shivam Sundaram, from the book Anyatha Sharanam Nasti, from the book Lokanatha Sai, from the other two books by Balapattabhi, and from this monumental work that Love Is My Form that we said about. So these are about maybe 5-6 books from which we are gleaning all stories and trying to construct a timeline. I wonder, Prem, for every single book that has been written, how many more books that could have been written potentially but have not been written are there? I'm sure it is no way comprehensive, but this is all that we have, and let's be grateful to Swami for this. And let's dive into 1947. The year 1947 in the Indian calendar is filled with great national significance because, you know, it was on the 15th of August in that year that 200 years of colonialism ended in India and India became a free nation. But the year 1947 also has a lot of significance for Puttaparthi and the Satyasai Avatar, if we may see it that way. Because so many changes happened, so many maiden ventures came about in this year. These ventures were to find fruition in the years to come. So many things started. For example, the Shivaratri celebrations, the Dasara celebrations, the birthday celebrations as we know now. That apart, you know, so many changes happened in Puttaparthi. For example, a first road was now laid to Puttaparthi. It was during 1947 that the transport commissioner of the erstwhile Madras state, Sri Hanumant Rao, he made a visit to Puttaparthi. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Swami himself accompanied him in doing his survey around the villages as to how a road can be made to Puttaparthi. And the road would be coming through Brahmanapalli. You know, the road that we have today is the main road, and we have a side road, a small road which goes via Brahmanapalli. In those days, that was the main road, and that was the first road to be constructed. So the road to Puttaparthi came via Brahmanapalli. In fact, Swami accompanied Hanumanta Rao to the survey, and they both had lunch in a small wayside hotel at Brahmanapalli.
Quite typically, the scriptures actually describe that the role of the avatar, one of the main roles an avatar comes to play, is to lay the path to divinity, which man has found. And here was Swami literally doing that, because he was surveying the place for laying the road to that was leading to him.
In fact, you know, I remember one quote that Swami used to often make when people used to complain to him that Swami is neglecting them, not, you know, the cold treatment that we call.
Mm-hmm.
When Swami doesn't speak to you and does not notice you. Those times Swami used to say that when a highway is undergoing a repair, you take a detour, not because you don't want to use the highway, but you don't want to dampen or hinder the repair works that are going on, so that the repair works go on smoothly and finish fast, so that the road becomes usable for you again. In order to do that, you take a painful detour. So Swami used to often say that, you know, I have come to repair this highway leading man to God. And so therefore, at some times when that highway needs repair, I will take a detour, meaning I will ignore you, I will give you the cold treatment. But remember that it is as difficult for me as it is for you, because I am choosing the tougher path. But it's only so that the repair works can proceed faster and you can improve faster, so that you become fit for me to interact with you again.
Interesting. I remember what Swami told one of the students once about this very same thing when Swami starts ignoring him. Swami said, you should be happy when I ignore you physically, because that's when I think more of you, Swami said.
Oh.
And Swami was explaining, see, if I want to avoid you, when I'm coming for darshan from far, I'll search where you're sitting.
Mm.
And so before you notice, I've already seen that you're sitting there, so I'm already looking for you, so already you're in my mind. So till I go past you, I'm thinking, no, I should not look at this boy. So all the more I'm thinking about you. So you
it is a natural thing also, you know, when you want to remember something, you often forget it, right?
Right.
That is why you say that, you know, I have to remember this. But when you say that, you know, I want to forget this part in my life, it's so difficult to forget. In fact, I remember a story in which a doctor tells a king who is bald. The king says, I want hair. And the doctor knows that there is no hope for the king to get hair. But he dare not say it to the king, because the king will punish him. So he gives him a herb and says, apply this to your head. But keep in mind that whenever you apply this herb to your head, you should not think about camels, because then it will not work. Needless to say, the king was never able to do that. You know, whenever he would take that herb to apply onto his head, the camel would come into his mind. This is a Kannada folk story, which shows that if you think that it is difficult to remember something, it's very difficult to forget. It's more difficult to forget something. So too, when Swami is avoiding you, actually, as Swami said, it is his way of showering more grace and more attention on you.
Right. So let's get back to the story.
Yes, getting back to the story. Apart from that, there were other changes that also took place, you know.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the railway station at Penukonda in 1947 got its first waiting room. So
okay.
This was like a big achievement to have its own waiting room where people can wait in the luxury of a roof over the head.
Right, I think many of the devotees explain that they land in Penukonda quite in the hostile time of the
hours,
night.
Unearthly hours, yes.
And then early in the morning, they get the...
They have to take a horse-drawn cart to the bus stand.
Right.
In fact, you know, another improvement that took place was the number of horse carts had nearly doubled. In those days itself, people, I think, began to, you know, find a commercial exploitation of Swami's godhood, divinity. You know, more number of horse carts had been added to ply people between the Bukkapatnam railway station and the bus stand.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not Bukkapatnam, Penukonda. Penukonda railway station and Penukonda bus stand, from where they could catch a bus to Bukkapatnam. And even the bus service to Bukkapatnam had been made reliable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there were timings.
Okay.
So it was a great joy for the devotees that they had actual timings for buses, that if you land at this time, the bus starts at this time. Before that, it was very ad hoc and random.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever the bus comes, you get into it. So these were really major improvements compared to the existing conditions of those times, that you had a reliable and regular bus service, you had the railway station with a waiting room.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of improvements took place in 1947. And in 1947, just as things became very, very easy for people to come to Puttaparthi, it seemed as if it became very easy for Swami to go out of Puttaparthi as well, because 1947 is filled with tours and travels, mainly in Tamil Nadu, Andhra Pradesh and parts of Karnataka.
And you know, this phase which you explained in 1947, it was very important in a sense for the devotees, because this was the time when literally Swami was drawing his own people to himself.
Mm.
It was a time when he was gathering his people.
Okay.
Because the kind of letters which Swami wrote then, the kind of things which Swami did by going to people's houses, and Swami would visit their mango groves and go to their factories to meet the people working in the factories.
Mm.
I think there's an account in 1947, Swami goes to a sandalwood oil factory.
Oh, yes, correct.
And sits and has a satsang with the workers over there.
Mm.
You know,
somewhere in nearby Madras.
Right. It just takes me back to that padyam which Swami used to chant or recite about his avatar wood, describing what he has come to do.
Mm.
And I'd like to play that. It's a musical rendition of that padyam which Swami used to sing, because this exactly describes what Swami was doing in this period. And maybe we'll continue after we listen to this wonderful piece.
Sure.
So that is that padyam, and you know what, the beauty with which Swami is explaining the idea of avatarhood.
Mm-hmm.
Swami is saying ananda balude, meaning that Nandabala has come as this Anandabala, the child of bliss. Yes. And Swami is saying ananda balude, tanavari gurtimpa tarali vache. He has come to recognize those who belong to him.
Mm.
He has come to gather those who are his own people. And that Ramachandra has come, Aramachandra, with a lot of leisure. There is no hurry for him. And that is what Swami is doing here. He has all the time for everything.
If you see the way Swami interacted with these early devotees, literally you almost feel like asking Swami, what are you doing in your avatarhood? I mean, you're like almost wasting the avatarhood by doing such. For example, you know, in 1947, Swami visited the Kuppam family.
Mm-hmm.
He went all the way to Kuppam. Actually, though they are called the Kuppam family, they were not exactly from Kuppam. They were about, you know, 5 kilometers away from Kuppam in a place called Vasanadu. Yes.
Right.
So, Swami visited Vasanadu. Imagine, Vasanadu was a tiny village and they say that it had about 10 to 15 houses. That's all. And Swami went to this place. okay, to Vasanadu, and when he was, what can they do? You know, now when Swami visited either Bombay or Shimla, you know, I'm saying Bombay, Shimla, because I got the chance to see the kind of welcome that Swami was given in Mumbai, Shimla and Delhi. You know, an entourage of people, a huge convoy of vehicles and all kind, you know, songs and flowers and everything possible to welcome Swami. But in those days, you know, it was so simple, naturally. So there were a group of 10 people who came to welcome Swami into Vasanadu. They put a garland of lotus flowers and Swami walked in. And Swami said that he would like to take rest. So Swami was allotted a small room in which Swami took rest. After that, in the evening, you know what Swami did? He walks out with the children of the family and goes into the orchard. And he teaches children how to climb trees. And then he climbs the mango trees, plucks mangoes for them and throws. And when they're not able to catch, he chides them. He teaches them how to catch mangoes, what he's throwing from the top of the tree. And then, you know, the children wanted to play. So Swami taught them how to make a swing, you know. So with ropes, the children and Swami together tie a swing from the branch of the trees. And they take turns swinging on it till late in the evening at night. And while Swami is doing all this, the elders, you know, they are all overwhelmed because all said and done, it's their Lord. So they are preparing a kind of palanquin. And it is said that there are even photographs of this, that they prepared an Om palanquin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Sanskrit word Om.
Right.
That was the backdrop and it was decked completely in flowers and a palanquin was made. So after Swami returns from his games with the children, you know, in the evening, they took him for a procession around in this village, which was barely about 15 houses. But Swami showered everyone with love, grace, gave them chance to do Pada Puja, everything. I mean, just see, this is literally what that poem says. Aar Ramachandrude, Aar Ramachandrude. So much leisure and so such beautiful chances to these devotees. That is how Swami spent, I mean, his time. So I can totally, totally relate with the second line of the poem, as you said, Aar Ramachandrude, Aar Ramachandrude.
And the fact that he had come to gather the people, you know, one of the letters which Swami writes to Mr. Tirumal Rao, we've spoken so much about him, one of the people who were instrumental in the Pathamandir being
built.
Built. You know, in one of the letters which Swami writes to him, Swami tells him that Dashara is coming and a lot of crowd is expected during Dashara. And I know that you don't like too much of crowd and congestion and all that. I would suggest that you come this weekend and spend some time in Mandir. There'll be lesser crowd. And Swami says that I know that you don't have a car for conveyance. You know, there are a few people here in the ashram right now who have a car. So Swami tells him, you can board at this station and you can get down at this station. I will send a car to pick you up from there. And I promise you that when you want to go back, I will provide a car to drop you in the same station. And, you know, Swami goes on to tell that I hope you will not disappoint me. And because at least I've taken this effort to write this letter to me, you will take this invitation and come here.
Wow.
And looking forward to meet you.
You know, looking forward to meet you. Right? Oh my God. Yeah.
And you know, that's what Swami was doing. He was pulling people and so endearingly drawing them to himself.
In fact, when you speak about how Swami drew people to himself, I'm reminded that in October, the Dasara celebrations came. You know, now also we are on the threshold of the Dasara celebrations in Puttaparthi.
Right.
So it's so beautiful that it has coincided with our Satsang's Dasara celebrations also. In 1947, the Dasara celebrations were one of the grandest that Puttaparthi had ever seen till then. So during that, as you stated the case with
Tirumal Rao,
Swami had also invited others. Mm-hmm. You know, one was Mr. Balapattabhi.
Okay.
So Swami had invited him and he said, Swami, my mother also would like to accompany me. Swami said, yes, get your mother along. But you know, his mother was aged and she needed some kind of material comforts. So Swami had assured Balapattabhi that don't worry, I will make all the necessary arrangements. In fact, Swami reserved a tent. You know, those days when people came in large numbers, there was no way to accommodate them. In fact, next to Swami's Pathamandiram, currently we see the Kalyana Mandapam. But at that time there was no Kalyana Mandapam. So a structure with wooden supports and a zinc corrugated roof had been constructed. you know, by different people at that time contributed.
In 1947, Dasara was the first time Swami, some devotees got army tents from Bangalore.
Exactly.
And set it up for the festival.
Correct.
Facilitate people.
So, one of such tents, Swami had put it bang opposite to the Path Mandir.
Mm-hmm.
And he had reserved it for Balapatabhi's mother. You know, so that was the plan. So this had been informed to him also. So when Balapatabhi arrived with his mother, he told his mother to stand in front of the tent, kept all the luggage there, some of the luggage, and the rest of the luggage, you know, that time the road had not yet been constructed, so it was the same route. So he went back to fetch the other luggage. Now, in the meanwhile, what happened was, as we will come to this later, the Dasara celebration, this was in the middle of the Dasara celebrations, so the procession had already started. And so everybody went into the procession. In the meanwhile, a jeweler who arrived from Bangalore, he saw that this tent had not yet been occupied. So he went and occupied it, not caring for the lady, old lady who was standing outside. She was just waiting out of courtesy for her son to come. But in the meanwhile, he occupied it, put all his luggage, everything, and ran to have a look at the procession that was on.
Okay.
We will come to the procession later, how it happened, what it was. But then, Balapatabhi comes. Now, they are very, you know, they are not those types who will go and throw the luggage out and occupy themselves. So, they kept their luggage and kept waiting outside the tent. And when the procession passed by, they had the darshan of Swami. After that, the jeweler returns. Again, he doesn't bother about these two. He goes in. And when he goes in, on his luggage, there's a snake. And he's so scared. He comes running out of the tent saying that there's a snake, there's a snake. He goes back. He doesn't know how to take his luggage out because the snake is sitting right on top. It's a cobra. And he's very scared. In the meanwhile, a messenger comes to this jeweler and says, you know that Swami is calling you. Baba has summoned you. So he rushes. And so, imagine Prem again, so beautiful it is. Baba's mandir is just about 10 meters away and anytime you want, you can go and have his darshan. He's just there, right there, and Baba summoning you is just like, you know, your mother or father summoning you. You can go and meet them anytime. Such was the proximity that these people enjoyed. So he rushes and Swami is there and Swami tells him, what you thought that the tent is your luxury room as you have in your place? It has been reserved for Balapatabhi's mother who is sick. So you occupied it and made her stay out. Didn't even bother for her. And then Swami told that since you did like that to that woman who is suffering, I had to appear there in the form of a snake to scare you out. Okay. I went there as a snake in order to show you that this does not belong to you. Now go that there's no snake over there. Take your luggage and vacate the place. I shall give you some other spot. But that spot is reserved for Balapatabhi and his mother. And so, you know, I was reminded of this incident because you said, Swami personally, he spent so much of time interacting, making every devotee's problem into his own problem, giving it so much of importance, so much so that the devotee got overwhelmed. Who will not be overwhelmed when the person whom everybody is worshipping as God is giving you so much personal attention and doing things for you. So that went on. And that was how Swami gave a room to Balapatabhi's mother during the Dasara celebrations.
Right. Before we come back to the Dasara celebrations, that is one of the important episodes in this period. Talking of Balapatabhi, he seems to be quite a popular character in this period because many times mention is made. In fact, when Swami travelled to Udumalpet, which is the place from where Balapatabhi hails, I think that was the first place where they had an elephant procession for Swami.
Oh.
So Swami was taken around on an elephant with two elephants as holding the umbrella.
Oh.
A three elephant procession was taken for Swami.
I remember reading about Swami visiting Udumalpet.
Right.
Swami actually went to Udumalpet from Karur.
Right.
And Karur is very historic because it is probably the first time in Swami's life that he gave a public discourse.
Right.
And that happened in Karur. And from Karur to Udumalpet, Swami went along with Balapatabhi and his driver, Balapatabhi's driver.
Right.
I was not aware of this grand elephant procession. Right. But we will come to again this Karur discourse after the Dasara celebrations.
Right. That's again a historic thing.
Okay. Yes.
But I think before the Dasara, Swami, of course, he started traveling to Machilipatnam way back in 1945.
Correct.
But I think in that trip, which he made in 1947, mm-hmm. before Dashara, there were some historic events which happened.
Oh yes, I think we should relive those.
Right. I think that is where when Swami was traveling to Machilipatnam, he was mm-hmm. being escorted by the hosts, and they had planned to stop somewhere and have lunch.
Yes, it was a convoy of, I think, two vans and a car,
right.
or something like that.
So they had had a huge case which was filled with food.
Mm-hmm.
So Swami had instructed the driver to stop in a place where there was good water source, where they could sit and have a kind of a picnic sort,
yes.
of a thing. So they all sit there and they gather, and Swami tells them to get some dry leaves to serve as plates. So everything is got and it's all laid. And when they open the case is empty. There's no food in it.
Oh my God. Huh.
And one of the people who accompanied Swami says that they were so disappointed because they were so hungry. They were waiting for that lunch break. So
I think they must have scolded the host then.
In fact, Swami joined them and, you know, Swami looked at the host and said, "What have you done? There's no food in this and I'm hungry and you've not got."
Typical Swami, right?
See the play with which Swami makes this whole thing happen.
Huh.
And then there's a gust of wind with which the leaves get blown away.
Oh, which had been
placed
for...
the dry leaves and all that. And Swami says, "No, go and catch the leaves."
You know, that's the plate.
Right, that's the plate. So all of them are scattered around trying to gather these leaves. And when they come back, the case which was empty just a few minutes before they went was brimming with food.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And none of them actually saw how Swami materialized it, whether Swami covered it with a lid and then opened it, there was food, or he just appeared bang over there. When they all came back, there was food, hot food, and Swami served it to all of them. You know, this is one of the
I notice in all such episodes, I read one more episode where, you know, Swami says, there'll be no puja today. We had narrated this.
Right.
He says, there'll be no puja today, and so nobody cooks any food. And then Swami asks, where is the food? And they all say, "Swami, what is this? You only said that there is no puja today, and no food today, you are not having food." Swami said, "I said, I am not having food, but what about others? You should not do this. There are children, they need to be fed." So some of them even get angry on Swami. Swami tells them, "Okay, you go out." Sends them out. When by the time they come in, all the vessels are brimming with food. I just feel that, you know, I don't know if I mentioned this before, but Swami always gave that scope for the believer to believe and for the doubter to doubt. You know, he could have as well filled the food in the vessels in front of everybody. But Swami sends them so that if anybody wants to doubt, they can doubt. But any person with even the slightest logic will know that it's not possible that by the time you collect a few leaf plates out of nowhere in the middle of some woods on the road, Swami cannot fill up a vessel with food. But Swami used to do that. I mean, I often wonder when I read, why Swami didn't you do it directly in their presence? Or even sometimes when Swami does in their presence, he covers the vessels with some plate or some leaf, taps and then opens. I mean, if you can do it, you can as well do it without covering it, right? No. But somehow it looks like Swami's life has always been like that, where he gives the believer ample reasons to believe and the doubter enough reasons to doubt, right?
Exactly. I think that's what happens most of the time. And in fact, you know, one of the things Swami tells Rani Subramanyam, Rani Ma, we've had a huge series on a very popular one.
Mm-hmm.
She was also one of those people who came in the early 40s, and they came from as far as from Delhi. You know, they get drawn to Swami, they come here.
Mm-hmm.
And Swami doesn't talk to her for a couple of days, 2 or 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, when Swami talks to her, Swami calls her aside separately and tells her that, "I know you're finding it very difficult to accept me as God."
Mm-hmm.
So she feels very embarrassed when Swami confronts her this way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she doesn't know what to say. Swami's saying, "It's fine." And Swami is going on to tell her that, see, if somebody who looks just like you, who's in a human body just like yours, comes and tells you, "I'm God," how can you accept it?
Hmm.
You know, Swami is arguing from her point of view, you know.
Against himself.
Right. How can you accept if somebody like you comes and tells you that he's God? Hmm. I think it's obvious you cannot accept it and you should not accept it.
Hmm.
Then Swami tells her that you go back home, and when you're back home, you test me.
Hmm.
Give me whatever test you feel is appropriate. And if I prove that I'm God, then you hold on to me. And then Swami says, don't test me after that. Because after that, his testing phase starts, I think.
Yes. First the devotee tests the Lord, then the Lord tests the devotee.
Right.
And, you know, that is one thing I feel we should always keep in mind. Because often the mind is such that doubts plague us. Different thoughts come. And it's a monkey mind after all. So, at such times, we should go back to those experiences where which actually convinced us of Swami's divinity and keep that in mind. See, Swami says, you can test me. But Swami says, after testing me, having been convinced, don't test me again after that. I find it so logical again because there's a story, you know, in the Jataka tales. A few monkeys decided to plant a garden and the farmer teaches them how to do it also. They plant a garden, but after 1 month, none of the plants are coming up. So the farmer says, what happened? Whatever I have taught you is the right way. If you do it that way, you should get a garden by now. Then he comes to know that the monkeys every day dig up to see if the roots are being thrown out by the seeds and if the plant is growing. And by this process of digging up every day to check, they are not giving the seed any chances to grow itself. So also the seed of faith that has been planted in our heart, if we want it to grow, we should not keep digging it out every time and testing it. After some time, that is what is faith about. You know, you just have the confidence that I just need to water it with my love. The roots are growing though I cannot see them.
Right, you know, talking of this very same thing, one person puts it this way very beautifully. He says a little child wants to cross the road. Okay, so it's wondering how to cross because it's a heavy traffic-ridden road. So there one person comes by and the little child goes up to him and says, Uncle, can you help me cross the road? Okay, and the person says, yeah, hold on to my finger, I'll take you. So how do you usually cross a road which is very broad and which is having intermittent traffic? Now you take a step forward, then you stop.
You look to the left, to the right.
And again you go, middle of the road, you suddenly see a vehicle coming, you stop.
You take shelter on that divider in the middle.
So this child is saying, I want to cross the road. Why is this man stopping, taking a step back, sometimes taking a step to the right, sometimes taking a step to the right, to the left, and then going forward, and then stopping, then again coming back. You know, you have taken refuge in this person to take you across the road. So don't think that why is he stopping, why is he not going, why is he moving now, why is he not moving. Just hold on to his finger, he will take you across the road. And you know, he says that we do something even more stupid. For some time we hold this uncle's hand, for some other time we go and hold some other uncle's hand.
Okay.
And in the process we stay on the same side of the road. We never cross the road
changing
at all.
Changing gurus, changing gods.
Right. But this is what Swami was telling, you know, hold on to me after your period of reasoning. But once you hold on to me, don't keep questioning your move every now and then.
So I think this, yeah, we started with this food, how Swami used to give scope for the doubter. I think those are the Lord's tests.
Right.
The Lord's test to see whether, you know, the devotees are indeed devotees. Because when we have the right to see if our God is indeed God, I feel the Lord also has his right to see if his devotees are indeed devotees. Or just people who have been attracted and who can be repelled away in the same manner. Coming back to the story in 1947, as we said earlier, one of the most important things that happened was the Dasara celebrations. And the Dasara festival was a real grand spectacle. In fact, you know, the previous year, Swami, we discussed how he had seen the Dasara being celebrated in Mysore. And he was so impressed with it. So the devotees also felt that, you know, such a thing should be replicated. In fact, people say that the lights that we see in Kulwant Hall, that is so beautiful, so well lit, such a illumination, you know, it has been inspired by the illumination that Swami saw on the Mysore Palace and said that I too will have something like this. You know, so, yeah, so a lot of inspiration was drawn from the Mysore Dasara. But for this Dasara, you know, on the first day, there was a procession. Well, there was a procession on every day, and for each day they tried to make a different kind of vehicle to carry Swami.
Okay.
On one day there was a palanquin, the Om palanquin, which we spoke about in Vasanadu.
Right.
It was replicated for Dasara as well, because Swami apparently liked it so much. And people also liked the idea of seeing their Lord in front of the primeval sound. So then there was the Om palanquin. Then for one day, again, all these photographs are there. It's wonderful to see the pictures. They had made a palanquin shaped like a celestial swan. Swan and all flowers on the swan, decked with flowers, and Swami would be taken around in that. For one day they made a chariot. So for all the 9 days of the festival, they had different vehicles to take Swami in a procession. And the procession formed one of the most important events of the Dasara celebration. And for each day, Swami would wear different robes. If we see the description, it's simply amazing. Imagine, Swami wore a violet robe. Swami wore a light pink robe. Swami wore a sky blue robe. Swami wore a green robe. The sad thing is, all the photographs of that period
are
black and white, and all the robes look the same. But just imagining that is so amazing. I'm reminded of the section in Chaitanya Jyoti. Have you seen that section?
Where they've tried to recreate these kind of palanquins, different shapes, this one and the, I think that Adi Sesha is there.
And they have got Swami in different robes.
They have a mannequin shaped like Swami in different colored robes.
Exactly. And that section is dedicated to the devis. And I think it has been inspired by the first Dasara celebrations that were held in Prashantilayam. I'm saying this because many times I've gone through Chaitanya Jyoti, I've often wondered why did they make this room like this, you know, where Swami is in different colored robes and like different devis, like Katyayani, like Gayatri, like Durga. They have named, they have named Swami after each of those goddesses. And it is only after reading this history, you know, history makes so much sense actually. That is why it's also there as a subject in classrooms. Reading this, now that chamber makes so much sense. I only wish there was somebody to explain the reason behind why those mannequins have been placed. But at least I know it, and as much as possible I will propagate it. That's what I thought. But those mannequins have been inspired by this procession that used to be held during Dasara, where each day Swami would wear robes of different colors. And you know, because the goddess, mother goddess aspect used to be worshipped, all the devotees, you know, what they would do, the ladies especially, they would want to deck Swami like a woman. And so they would go and offer their jewelry to him. Of course, Swami would not accept it. So they would tell Swami that, Swami, after Dasara we will take it back. But please wear it for Dasara. And you know, I was also surprised reading different accounts. You know, people have narrated it. This is there in Anyatha Sharanam Nasti. This is there in Lokanatha Sai. You know, both the books have descriptions of this Dasara, of how Swami would wear necklaces of diamonds and different things offered to him lovingly by the devotees so that he wears it during the procession. And Swami would also have a veil. So he would, you know, almost look entirely like a woman, because there's a veil of a matching color with the robe, with all the jewelry decked. And invariably this procession would go to four houses, four homes, compulsorily. Ishwaramma, the mother, Venkamma, the sister, Parvatamma, the other sister, and Subbamma. You know, Karnam Subbamma had passed away by then, but then the younger Karnam, Kamalamma, was there. Mm-hmm. So it is still called Karnam Subbamma's house. So they would go to these houses, and in each of these houses they would offer coconuts, break coconuts to remove drishti and have aarti. And the procession would go on throughout the village. So this was one feature of the Dasara. Apart from this, there was the Kunkumarchana, which goes on even to this day. That is chanting the 108 or 1008 names of the Devi. And with each chant of each name, they offer kumkum to the photograph of the Devi. At that time, somebody got pictures of Swami, and they would offer this Kunkumarchana. All the ladies especially would sit in a group and do this Kunkumarchana to Swami. Apart from this, another major feature during the Dasara was the Narayan Seva. A Narayan Seva where Swami himself would serve all the people, poor people, with food. And as always, there would be an infinite and inexhaustible supply of food. And this kind of feeding would go on almost from the morning at around 10 o'clock, sometimes even till about 9 or 10 at night.
Mm-hmm.
So this was what a typical Dasara celebration in those times looked like.
Beautiful. It is always special to worship Swami as the mother, because somehow we all have our own way we relate to Swami. But somewhere this motherly aspect is a part of that relationship which we have with Swami. And this is one of those festivals where we worship Swami as the mother. Nami Arvind, before we go forward, we'll take a small break here. We'll play a little song, a song which actually celebrates Swami as the mother himself. So let's play that song and we'll continue after that.
తల్లికి ఉంటుంది ఇంతటి ప్రేమ, సాయి మాతకు కాక జీవుల పైన. ఏ తల్లికి ఉంటుంది ఇంతటి ప్రేమ, సాయి మాతకు కాక జీవుల పైన. ఏ తల్లికి ఉంటుంది ఇంతటి ప్రేమ, సాయి మాతకు కాక జీవుల పైన.
It was a beautiful song rendered by two of our colleagues from Radio Sai, Arvind Sai and Anirudh, during the occasion of the Sai Sannidhi Day.
8th of September.
Yeah. Right. And of course it was first sung in Swami's presence when Swami was on the Jula during his birthday, by P. Sushila. You know, going back to that motherly love of Swami, and I think that was something which is running through the entire narrative, 1947-48, where Swami was, we spoke about how Swami was saving people from the evil spirits, and Swami was doing that part of it. Swami was curing people with diseases. You know, even now with all the advancement in technology and Medicare, we have two hospitals here, but still Swami had to keep continuing to cure people. You can imagine the time, 1940s.
Exactly.
The nearest medical center would have been miles away. And for every small thing, they had to turn to Swami, and the role which Swami would have played then was...
See, the wonderful thing is, when people are sick, suppose even people are terribly sick in places like Bangalore or Madras, instead of availing the modern facilities nearby, they would rather choose to travel all the way to come to Parthi, which had no medical facilities, because they wanted to come to Swami. Because they knew Swami was like their, you know, Dhanvantri, who the god of health and god of medicine. So, it is not, I mean, it may seem paradoxical, but it's very logical for a person who understands faith and love for Swami, that people came from far off places which had medical facilities better than Puttaparthi in order to get themselves healed and cured by Swami. And in case of devotees who did not do that, I'm sure there are many instances where Swami himself sent for them and cured them.
Right. I think one such story is that of Yadalam Nagamma. We've spoken about this Yadalam family from Mukapatnam. You know, one of those rare families which not only showed devotion to Swami, but also were very, very kind to those people who came all the way to travel, I mean, traveling that difficult terrain to meet Swami. This is one of those families which were not hostile to those devotees, who in fact were very hospitable to them. So we know how that blessing Swami gave on that family for this kindness they've...
In fact, I remember even as late as 2003 or 2004, I remember Swami in Bangalore visited the Sri Sathya Sai Samskrita Sadhanam.
Right.
This was built by one of the members of the Yadalam family.
Yadalam Gangadhar Shetty.
Yes, Yadalam Gangadhar Shetty. And Yadalam Gangadhar Shetty continues to be in our midst today, and he had the privilege of walking behind Swami every time Swami visited Vrindavan. And maybe this family is one of those rare families in which almost 5 to 6 generations of people in the families have been devotees of Swami.
So this incident which I wish to narrate here, you know, this Yadalam Nagamma, she and her granddaughter, about I think 3-year-old granddaughter, they were traveling to one Modigubba. It's quite close to you, about 30-35 kilometers from Puttaparthi.
Puttaparthi, yes.
You know, they both were traveling to this place to attend a wedding. And there she met with a fire accident, where the end of a sari gets burnt. You know, they used to have these Petromax lamps then. It used to be that only source of light.
Even today, many of our vendors, vegetable vendors in India, use Petromax lamps.
Exactly. So her sari gets caught in fire by falling into that Petromax lamp, and you can imagine she suffers burns, she and her granddaughter.
Okay.
And you know, the face starts swelling and the serum starts coming out, and her eyes get swollen, she's not able to see.
Oh, so it must have been severe burns.
Yeah, quite severe burns. And after the accident, she doesn't want to go back to her village, you know, fearing the change in her appearance and the repulsive appearance she's got on now. So she goes to her mother's place, which is, I think, in Kottakota or something, a particular village.
Okay, Kottakota.
So she and her granddaughter go off there, and in that place she's living, and the rest of the party, which return to Bukapatnam after the wedding, they go and inform the husband and the children that this is the accident which has happened, and she's gone to her mother's place
to recover from those blisters.
Right. So immediately her husband starts to that village, comes there, and she still refuses to come back to Bukapatnam. So the husband only...
Because she does not want to show her face, is it?
She's got so disfigured.
Okay.
So then the husband takes the grandchild, comes back to Bukapatnam. The next day, this grandchild's mother brings this grandchild to Swami. You know, because she's also suffered burn marks. She's, you know, a little child with burn marks. You're going to grow up with that.
Hmm.
So she brings the child to Swami. And before she could come to Puttaparthi, Swami is already describing this whole scene to the people in Puttaparthi, saying that Nagamma met with an accident like this. She's living in her mother's place. She doesn't want to come to Puttaparthi. And saying that the daughter is bringing the granddaughter here.
Okay, so, just for my clarification, let me get it right. So right now, Swami is describing the happenings in Puttaparthi, while the grandmother is in Kottakota.
Right.
And the mother and the granddaughter, that is the mother's daughter, they are traveling towards Puttaparthi from Bukkapatnam.
Right.
Okay.
Huh. And that's when Swami is describing the whole scene here.
Hmm.
And but when they come, Swami gives them, I think Swami materializes two rava laddus and gives to the mother and daughter.
Rava laddus. Okay. Oh, interesting. Huh.
And Swami instructs her to send her husband to Kottakota and get her mother. Tell Swami is calling for her.
Oh, and the grandmother.
Right.
Okay.
Swami is telling that she will not come to Bukkapatnam. So bring her directly here to Puttaparthi.
Hmm.
So immediately the her husband starts to Kottakota, goes, takes a bullock cart and gets her there. And her condition is so pathetic. You know, they describe that serum coming out of the wounds is so much that they use up three dhotis in trying to dry the wound.
Oh.
That's how bad
dhotis. It is. Forgot. That's like three big towels.
Right. And her eyes are swollen. Swami is telling, you know, while giving the description of the injury she has sustained, Swami is telling that the eyes have started swelling, but the eyes have not lost their sight. They are still fine and all that. And the whole description Swami is giving here. So finally they manage to bring this mother to Puttaparthi. They reach Mandir at around 4 p.m. And interestingly, Swami doesn't come out to see her. And Swami has instructed everybody in the Mandir that nobody should be there to receive her, saying that she looks very, very ugly and you will not be able to, you know,
stand
that sight.
Okay.
So he instructs that nobody should be there to receive her. So she's brought and she's laid in front of the Mandir and covered with a mosquito net, because, you know, you have open wounds and you'll have insects coming and feeding on it. So she's covered with a mosquito net and she's laid there. And Swami is attending bhajans. After bhajans, Swami is retired into his room.
Oh,
Swami is not coming to see her. And they're wondering, you know, what is this? And she's lying there with all this. Much later, Swami comes with the keys for a room where she can stay. And the first thing Swami looks at her and says, "What, Nagamma, you seem to have got some special jewelry from, you know, from the marriage that you visited. What is all this you're wearing?" Looking at the mosquito net which was, you know, placed around her.
So, at that time, it would have seemed like a cruel joke, right?
Right, you know, exactly. You know, anybody would say that, how can you mock at somebody who's come with such serious injury?
Hmm.
But then Swami sends word to one of the, one of the Kuppam family ladies who was there, asking her to get some food for Swami.
Hmm.
Swami tells get some rasam and rice. And Swami himself makes the rasam and rice, along with it, Swami materializes some vibhuti, puts it in that, and mixes this thing and makes Yadalam Nagamma eat that food. And Swami says, "You have this. I know you've not had food for a long time. You have this food." And Swami tells, "You take this room keys, you go and stay there. Till morning you should not wake up."
Okay.
Swami says, "You sleep well. Don't worry about anything, go to sleep." And at 4 o'clock she just wakes up without anybody waking her up, without any noise. And when she comes out, everybody is shocked because she's absolutely transformed to her normal self.
Oh my God.
There is no trace of that burn mark she's had. And they say that the only sign which was left was that, you know, her hands had that white pigmentation mark when you have fresh skin in the growing.
Correct.
But nowhere else they could have any sign of that she's been through an accident like this. And you know, even that white patches on her fingers, much later when she told Swami that, "Swami, whenever I serve water or give something to people, some people look at my hand and feel that, you know, something weird has happened." So Swami materialized vibhuti, gave it to her and said, "Apply it on your hand." And with time, even that vanished.
Wow. You know, oftentimes we can actually relate with this episode in our own lives, because so many times we feel that when we need it the most, the Lord is not responding. See, in the story that you in this experience that you narrated, Swami has all the while been thinking of the devotee, but for some reason, unknown to anybody else except to the Lord, when she actually arrives there, Swami has ignored her for so many hours. You know, I am reminded of another very similar incident. This happened to one certain Swarnamma. She was from Bangalore. She was suffering from a terrible skin disease, which was causing her skin to crack from the palm. The skin on the elbow was cracking till the ankle and knees.
Okay.
All the skin was cracking up and it was very painful. it was unbearable for her. So she decided to come to Puttaparthi and see Swami, pray to Swami, her Lord. She was a devotee by then. So she comes to Puttaparthi and she is accommodated in a small hut adjacent to the mandir. The next morning she had her bath, got ready, went for the bhajans. And imagine, in those days, a crowd was about like 40 or 50 people, that's all. So it is so easy to actually get Swami's attention. But try hard as she might, she was not able to get Swami's attention. She was not able to communicate with Swami. She was never able to get an audience with Swami to communicate her problem with Swami.
Okay.
And 3 days passed like this, after which she got so frustrated. She felt, what is this? I came here thinking Swami is my refuge and now Swami is not bothering about me. So she went back to the hut, packed up things, and she was ready to leave. When she is ready to leave, somebody comes and says that Baba is calling. So she goes rushing to Swami. And Swami asks her, are you angry with me? You are leaving? And then, you know, she is like flustered. What does she say? That all the while I have been trying to talk to you, you are not looking at me. And now you are asking me whether I am angry and I am leaving. So Swami doesn't even wait for her to answer. He immediately, you know, waves his hand and materializes an ointment. And he tells her that you apply this ointment to these parts. I know what you have come from. I know what you have come for. I know everything. You don't worry. And he gives her this ointment. You know, she applied this ointment and she saw that her skin was absorbing this ointment. And just like the case of Nagamma that you narrated, the next day morning, there was no trace of any crack. Her skin was radiant and beautiful. She went and she just had tears of gratitude for Swami. She didn't know what to speak. Swami just smiled and blessed her and said, be happy. You know, these incidents, they show us that many times in life we feel that Swami is ignoring us. When we need the most, when we think that there is no other refuge, anyatha sharanam nasti, other than you, there is no other refuge for us. And when we come to him, he's turning his back onto us. He's ignoring us. Why, Swami? Why at this time? You gave me attention when I had small things. Now, when this is the greatest problem that is striking me, why are you not giving me attention? I think at that time, we should remember these incidents and remind ourselves that, you know, God has a plan. And he knows everything. Here also to Swarnamma, Swami said, I know, Swarnamma, I know your problem. I know what you have come here for. That was the experience even of my, you know, grand uncle, my father's eldest brother, when he came to Puttaparthi. The first time he visited Puttaparthi in the 60s was in order to tell Swami that, Swami, I have been transferred from Bangalore. I don't want to leave Bangalore. And after a few days, he got his interview. And the first statement that Swami made to him in the interview room was, you will not be leaving Bangalore. All your life you will be in Bangalore. Now tell me if there is anything that you want to ask from me. My uncle was just dumbstruck. What does he ask? The only thing that he wanted to ask, Swami already said. You know, that was in 1963, Prem. And today we are 2013. My uncle still is in Bangalore. He has never shifted out of Bangalore even for a week or a month. No transfers ever came his way. That is the word of the Lord. You know, so Swami knows everything. And in spite of that, if Swami is making us wait, it must be for a reason. We may not understand the reason. But just because we don't understand the reason, let us not go to the extent of not understanding Swami. Let us understand that Swami is the most loving and he will always be there to help us and to guide us. We just have to trust him and hold on to him. Once we have tested him and trusted him, continue to trust him and not be like that monkey that digs to check the roots.
You know, reminded of another beautiful story that once somebody was sharing. It's like a little child is taken to a dentist's office. You know, she's having an appointment with the dentist. And imagine a small child goes into a dentist's clinic. The kind of implements she sees. You know, this guy is coming with a huge drill. He's having a hammer in his hand.
I'm reminded of Ogden Nash's famous poem on this exact.
A dentist, right?
In fact, I remember three lines. He says, some pains in life are physical while some are mental. But one that is both is dental.
Dental, right, exactly. You know, imagine a little child is going and she sees these drills and saws and hammers in the hands of this man who's coming so menacingly towards her. And she looks at her mother, who has brought her to the, you know, the dentist clinic, and she's very calm. So what does this child think? That the same mother, whom when I fell yesterday was so perturbed by the injury which I sustained, is now so, you know, stoic when she's seeing that this man is coming with me with all these implements. So she thinks that if this is going to harm me, my mother will not be silent like this. Because I know the compassion of my mother. And right. I know how she came running to me when I had an injury. So if she's letting this happen to me, then this cannot be something which is harmful.
Wow.
He says if we can look at God that way, and know that the same God who did not resist coming to me when I needed him, if he's keeping away from me, then this must be for my good.
Beautiful, beautiful lesson in there, Prem. But you know, oftentimes, like the humans that we are, we keep making this mistake. And that's why, even though he's doing everything for our good, and we misunderstand him, in fact, even criticize him, Swami doesn't mind. He continues to shower his love. I'm reminded of that beautiful letter that you read out to me recently, of what Swami wrote to a devotee, almost apologizing and explaining why he could not do something. I mean, there's no need for God to do such things. But yet he does, because of out of his ultimate compassion and karuna, and you know that word karuna has no translation in English, but that kind of divine motherly love and compassion. I think you should, you know, re-narrate that beautiful letter that Swami wrote.
Definitely. You know, this was again written to the same devotee, Thirumal Rao. One of the letters written to him. This person, as we have mentioned before, he comes from Bangalore. So invariably, whenever Swami went to Bangalore, he would definitely visit Mr. Thirumal Rao. So this was one of those trips when Swami went to Bangalore and could not visit him.
Okay.
So this letter was in apology for, you know, having not visited him. And Swami writes that Swami was writing about a little child called Sulochana. And Swami writes that this girl fell ill in the middle of the night and they had to rush her to Bangalore to admit her in a hospital. Swami says that at around 11 o'clock we started from Puttaparthi and we went to Bangalore. We reached there at 1 o'clock in the night, admitted her in the hospital, and then Swami says, I came to know that one of the devotees in Mysore, their daughter was about to die.
Okay.
And her only wish was to see Swami before she passes away.
Okay.
So Swami says that I didn't even have time for food. I started at 1:30 from Bangalore and drove to Mysore and reached there early in the morning and blessed this child who was, you know, going through her last moments. And
so
then,
in the middle of the night, he starts from Puttaparthi to Bangalore and then Bangalore to Mysore. You know, recently I did this trip, Prem. So it takes about 7 hours even now with highways and modern cars, top speed. It took almost 7 hours to do the drive from Puttaparthi to Bangalore and Bangalore to Mysore.
Absolutely. So here, you know, Swami is telling that I went to Mysore, then from Mysore I went to Kunur. And in Kunur, I think Swami spent about 2 or 3 days. Kunur is a town which is closer to Ooty. So then Swami said, then I got a telegram saying that 200, 300 people have landed in Puttaparthi and they're waiting for you.
Okay.
So then Swami starts from Kunur in the middle of the night. Then Swami explains that I drove to Bangalore only to pick up my pressed robes from
God.
A devotee's house. Imagine, I think those days devotees used to get Swami's robes to Bangalore to get them
dry cleaned
and pressed. So Swami said, I came to Bangalore, one particular devotee's house, at 12 in the night just to pick up my robes, then drove to another devotee's house to pick up photographs from there. And then I came, so, you know, because of this tight schedule I had, I couldn't stop to meet you, though I came through Bangalore, and I hope you understand. That's the letter Swami writes. And you know, there's another interesting thing which happens here. Now, imagine Swami is in Mysore and he gets a telegram saying that 200 devotees are waiting for you. And Swami is saying, oh, 200 devotees have come, I have to come to Bangalore. I mean, I have to go to
return to Puttaparthi.
In the meanwhile, in Puttaparthi, one of the people who are there as part of that 200-300 people is Lokanatha Mudaliar, whom we've spoken about.
Okay, that Gindi temple.
Gindi temple. And you know, he has an interesting account to narrate. He gets malaria fever staying in Puttaparthi.
Okay.
Okay, and he gets very high temperatures and they don't know what to do again. No doctors around, no medical facilities.
And no Swami also around.
And no Swami also around. And in the middle of the night, in Puttaparthi, Swami appears and gives him vibhuti and brings his fever down.
Okay.
And by morning, he's fine. Okay. And then Swami is reaching. in the car, and Swami stops at Karnad Nagipalli, where all the other devotees, these 200 odd devotees, have come to receive
Swami.
Yeah,
you have to get down and walk
right,
back.
Just across Chitravati. And after landing there, Swami saying, where is Mudaliar? I have already cured him. Why hasn't he come to receive me? And, you know, this Swami who could appear in Puttaparthi to cure Mudaliar sees it necessary to drive all the way to Mysore to see that little girl, and then decides it's necessary to drive all the way to Bangalore to pick up his clothes and then drive all the way to Puttaparthi. You know, it's Swami is inexplicable. You just have to enjoy
him. That is why, you know, his life is his message. He could do all this, but he chose not to do. I mean, he used, if we can say, you know, that divine powers. He used those divine powers only for others, never for himself. The other day I remember somebody was narrating about how Swami, you know, used to sit every day and write the Vahinis, the articles in Sanatana Sarthi, which later have been compiled into the different Vahinis, Prashnotra Vahini, Prema Vahini, Dharma Vahini, Dhyana Vahini. So apparently, one day, you know, when Kasturi Garu and another person, they went into the interview room, you know, they went to remind Swami that, Swami, your article is due.
Right, actually,
you're not
Kasturi went to remind Swami when Swami was talking to Gandikoti Subbarao.
Okay, yes.
The person,
yeah, you please continue that, yeah.
Yeah, actually Swami was with Gandikoti Subbarao, and Swami was explaining some Upanishad, which he was reading. And he had not told Swami that I'm reading his Upanishad. On his own, Swami started a discourse and was explaining that particular Upanishad, and he was really surprised. And in the middle of this, Kasturi comes and is reminding Swami that, Swami, this particular series is going on, we are awaiting your article. And that's when Swami waves his hand and materializes the article for the month.
Okay.
And gives it to Kasturi.
Yes. So you see, with a wave of his hand, Swami could materialize, and yet, when we read accounts, even when Swami went to Africa, he used to have such a tight schedule, you know, almost from 5 a.m. till about 11 p.m. His time was occupied with giving darshan, attending programs and meeting people, dignitaries. Such was his tight schedule. But even then, in the night, after 11 p.m., before 5 a.m., Swami would sit up to write articles which were, you know, due from him. You know, it often makes us wonder, this person, you know, he can just wave his hand and materialize it, and yet he chooses not to take the easy way.
And everywhere, the beautiful lesson, even when Swami was in Prashanthi Nilayam, you can imagine in the 50s and 60s, if Swami traveled so much, as the devotee circle was growing, Swami was traveling even more in the 60s when Swami was writing these articles. There are accounts when Swami would sit up late in the night in his room in the mandir, but if he were to switch on the light, then the devotees will know that Swami is awake, and they would not go to sleep. They would come and stand next to the window hoping that Swami might come out.
Correct.
So Swami would go into the bathroom, switch on the light there, sit and write the Vahinis there.
Wow. Really, what? And all this is done so naturally. It is not done as a show. It is not done like, here it is, this is how you should focus on me, I am the ideal. Swami did it naturally. And that is why I feel, even in the case that you mentioned, when it comes to making life easier for him, he never used any of the powers. He himself travelled, painstakingly travelled from Puttaparthi to Bangalore, Bangalore to Mysore in the middle of the night. But when it came to easing the devotees' pain, in an instant, Swami uses the divine power. I am reminded of one beautiful song, Hindi song that Anup Jalota ji has sung, and it goes like, Prabal Prem ke Pale Padkar, Prabal Prem ke Pale Padkar, Prabhu ko Niyam Badalte Dekha. Means, whenever I read stories of intense love, I see where the Lord is changing the rules of the game. And the next line is, Apna Maan Tale Tal Jaye Par, Bhakt Ka Maan Na Talte Dekha. Means, it says that the Lord is ready to sacrifice his own self-esteem, his own self-respect, but he will never allow a devotee's self-respect to go down. He'll always uphold that. And that, I feel, we can extrapolate even to this. He will himself undergo any suffering and pain, but he will never allow the devotee to undergo suffering and pain. And if at all we start saying that, but you know, this person is suffering, then, like how we discussed the story of Nagalakshmi or Swarnamma, those are examples where, for some reason, Swami is aware and yet he is allowing it because it is good for the devotee.
Right. And you know, talking of that letter, where Swami is mentioning that little girl, Sulochana. I think you should tell us something about that girl.
Yes,
Swami, you know, took that pains of traveling with her to Bangalore when Swami had to admit her in the hospital.
That is really true, because even, you know, every act of Swami is such an act of grace, love and an example for all of us. The Sulochana that Swami mentions in that letter is actually the daughter of Ranjot Singh.
Mm-hmm.
Ranjot Singh was in the police force when he came to Swami, and by 1947 he had become the Inspector General for Bangalore.
Okay.
That's quite a high position.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, the silver Shirdi Baba idol that Swami used to
do Vibhuti Abhishekam
to,
right,
that was given by Ranjot Singh.
Oh, okay.
And in fact, it was Ranjot Singh who offered the first ever silver throne to Swami.
Right. Is that the same silver throne where Swami says that let Subbaraju come and...
Exactly. We had spoken about it. You know, when Swami as a child in Kamalapuram is sitting on a rocking chair, when his...
Subbaraju's brother-in-law, Subbaraju.
Yes, Subbaraju comes and tells him, don't sit here. And Swami tells him that a time will come when I will sit on a silver throne. You will be the one who will clean that throne. And yes, so when actually Ranjot Singh offered him a silver throne during the Dasara, Swami did not use it till his birthday in 1947. And before the birthday, the throne was unveiled by none other than Subbaraju. And it was Subbaraju who later, with tears of repentance, recollected the prophetic word Swami had made almost a decade before. So yes, so coming back to the daughter Sulochana. Now she had an abdominal disorder.
Okay.
And she had undergone an operation to deal with the problem. And nothing seemed to be helping her, so she wanted to come and meet Swami. But the doctors advised her against it, said don't go to Swami.
Mm-hmm.
But she was firm in her faith, because nothing that medical science had to offer was helping her at all. So she came to Swami, and Swami would materialize some roots, some herbs, and make them into paste, mix them in water and give her the solution to drink.
Okay.
So though she was not cured, whatever Swami was doing, no, was helping her. She was feeling better and she used to be happy, comfortable. But then, you know, Swami always used to say that the Sulochana, she has a very sensitive spiritual inclination towards Swami.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a purpose for her life. And she has almost completed all her karmas.
Okay.
So in fact, Swami, apart from giving her these medicines, used to always speak words of wisdom with her and stay by her side.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, so you know, it was somewhere after Dasara that Swami received the message that Sulochana was seriously ill. She was not eating anything at all now. The doctors, everyone had raised their hands, given up. Swami comes. And you know, what Swami does is so amazing. Swami tells her, your favorite dish is masala dosa, right? Masala dosa is one of, you know, South India's
delicacies.
Awesome. And almost everybody loves it. And Swami materializes a masala dosa for her and tells her to eat it. And to everyone's utter amazement, Sulochana eats the masala dosa. Though she has not had anything for the last few days, she eats the masala dosa and she has a smile on her face. And then Swami materializes silver padukas, small ones, and tells her to keep it under her pillow at night. So everybody feels that, you know, oh, with this now she is going to recover. And it is from here that Swami went to Karur. We were speaking about that historic discourse. So Swami leaves to Karur and the padukas are kept under her pillow. It was indeed great fortune for Sulochana, but not in the way her family thought, because that night she breathed her last. And in fact, in Karur, to his host, Swami mentions that, you know, Sulochana has reached me. Swami tells it not to his host, I mean, Swami tells it to Sakamma.
Okay.
Swami tells Sakamma that, you know, Sulochana has reached me. Even before any telegram or anything has reached Swami that Sulochana has passed away, Swami tells this, and after that only the telegram comes that Sulochana has passed away. And an amazing thing that happens in the telegram is also the message that when they picked up Sulochana's body under the pillow, those padukas were no longer there. And mm-hmm. Swami said that they have served their purpose. You know, it was symbolic of she attaining the lotus feet of the Lord. Sulochana had one dear friend called Jayalakshmi.
Okay.
Who at this time, you know, had been out of the country. She had been abroad to complete her higher studies and her doctorate. So when she returned, she was heartbroken completely. She was sitting in front of Swami during one bhajan and she was weeping, missing her dear friend. Swami smiled at her, and with that smile, she could see Sulochana standing above Swami. You know, above Swami's head, she could see Sulochana smiling, as if reassuring and comforting her that I am fine, don't weep for me, celebrate for me because I am in a very beautiful place. And with that, Dr. Jayalakshmi was consoled. So, you know, everything that Swami does is for the good of his devotees, for the welfare of the devotees, because as Swami would often say in many of his discourses, from the hair tip till the tip of his toe, it is only selflessness, selflessness, love and love. And that is what our Lord is. Love is his form. Truth is his breath. So, indeed, blessed are we. And since the time in our clock in the studio show is 1:57, I think that we will reserve the visit to Karur for our next afternoon satsang.
Because, you know, that begins a completely different chapter era in Swami's life. Mm. Swami gives his first upadesh. Swami gives his first discourse. And how beautiful, you know, I'm tempted to give a sneak preview. One of the first things Swami speaks in the discourse is about his life, his childhood.
Wow.
Because after all, his life is his message. And you know, everything else is our interpretation, and from our understanding we try to interpret Swami's words. But the purest form of his message is the life that he led. And that was there for all of us to see. And whatever knowledge we all have, you know, are combinedly the knowledge which we all have, is that message which Swami has come to give. And it is indeed a pleasure and joy and our blessing to go through this life. So Arvind, so maybe we, as you said, reserve Karur and the events that happen in Karur for the next week.
We can leave with a song. Before that, as always, we offer this humbly with all our love and gratitude at the lotus feet of our dear Swami, who we firmly believe is every moment sitting here and listening, being part of the satsang, smiling when we talk of his mischief, keeping a serious face when we apparently seem to be criticizing him. We imagine it that way because that is truth. Because Swami has said, what you visualize, one day you will materialize. With that, thank you dear listeners. And as always, you can write any of your feedback, your suggestions, your comments. We have received a few based on the previous satsang. We will be responding to it soon. Any news, you can write any new suggestions or feedback, you can write to us at listener@radiosai.org. With that, thank you. Jai Sai Ram. On the other side of the song that you will hear now, you will be greeted by Chandu, Brother Chandu, with his segment Love to Love.
You.
జయ సాయి హరే, జయ సత్య సాయి హరే. సకల చరాచర భువన ప్రదీపా, నిఖిల నరానల చేతన రూపా, కోటి సూర్య సమ దివ్య ప్రకాశ, దీవ దివెన్నదనేనంత, కడలిని కొలువగ కడవెంత, జయ జయ సాయి హరే, జయ సత్య సాయి హరే. జగదాధార నిగమాధార జయ జగదీశ హరే, జయ జయ సాయి హరే, జయ సత్య సాయి హరే, జయ జయ సాయి హరే, జయ సత్య సాయి హరే.